welcome to a Not the Top 20 pod, maybe a Not the Top 20 podette, a quick bonus podcast discussing the very exciting, for the most part, playoff action that took place this weekend across the EFL. Ali and George here to talk through it. Before we go through the four playoff games, two from the Championship, two from League Two, let's take a moment to welcome Hull. I don't mean that to be condescending, but Hull City relegation confirmed today. Back to the Championship they come. We had them, we waved goodbye to them upwards about 12 months ago. George, as Hull come back down to the Championship, are they a different beast? What are they? What can we expect from them?
Yeah, I mean, you guess that they are. I think that whether or not they can keep Marco Silva is obviously going to be the big issue. I think we've seen with Rafa Benitez at Newcastle that, you know, good managers are good managers in the Championship. You don't necessarily need someone who knows the league very well. I'm fairly certain that with him at the helm, they'll be in good shape to come back up again or to challenge to. But the issue seems to be that his stock has risen so much that it'll be difficult for him for them to retain him, really. I don't think they deserve to go up when they did beforehand. Yeah, I think they're probably in a better shape now, in a better spot under Silva instead of under Steve Bruce.
Well, what will be interesting, if we are assuming that Silva won't stay, is what sort of manager they go for to replace him, having tried and tested what was seemingly a risk in some people's eyes in Marco Silva, away from the previous type of manager they had with Bruce and with Phelan. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach appointing a manager to look at the Championship, because as we know, you know, there's a lot of sort of tried and tested managers out there, or they could try and find another gem as they did with Silva.
I think whoever made the decision to bring Silva in obviously knows what they're doing. It seemed very out of the blue, and it didn't really seem like something that is in their kind of club identity to go for someone like that, but it was very, very smart, and I'm sure that they've got a list of targets ready to approach when they do make the decision. If they can't keep them, who they can go out and get them. So it'll be interesting for them. You'd assume that Silva will have better offers, and it'll be difficult for them to keep hold of him.
Still question marks, I think, around the ownership as well, and the fans, whether or not they're particularly happy with things on that side of things. So as always, plenty to talk about with Harlem. We look forward to talking about them next season. And the same can be said for Forest Green Rovers, who we welcome. They have arrived from the National League via the playoffs, winning today 3-1 against Tranmere. Their first ever time in the EFL, in the Football League, and it'll be very interesting. They're a curious little club, George, owned by Dale Vince, a green energy industrialist who has, he's transformed what was essentially a sort of village club. It's a very small town, almost a hamlet, really, and previously, historically, not a big club, put a lot of money into it, and eventually they've got the promotion that he so desired. Having failed in the playoff final last year, they went back and did what they needed. They are an all-vegan football club, in keeping with Vince's way of looking at things. Very much a new age man, and very into his renewable energy, etc., etc. So no pies at Forest Green. That's something to bear in mind as an away fan, but certainly a very interesting football club, and would be very interesting to see how they get on in the EFL. Be certainly interesting to see whether the way that it's been run is sustainable in terms of FFP, etc. And it's always interesting, isn't it, George, to sort of see someone a little bit new, although it would have equally been nice to have had an old famous club like Tranmere.
Yeah, I'm quite intrigued by it all. I think the fans and players have really bought into what Vince has done at the club, which obviously they have to do to make it work. So all the players, I think, are vegan, and the pitch itself is laid in a different way and all this stuff. I mean, you've got to wonder how far they can really take it, though. And I think we saw that he's said in the press that getting up to League One should be easy for Forest Green. You do have to wonder if it's sustainable to keep going for a club of that size. But yeah, good on them.
And it's easy if you've got Daryl Clark in charge. Less easy, perhaps, with Mark Cooper. But we'll see. He's done a very good job since he's joined, I think.
And also, with Cooper, someone who kind of about 10 years ago was genuinely one of the kind of most promising young coaches around, and he had a torrid time after that. So you know, it's good for him. It's great to have a young British manager who's had a tough time of it in a job where he can really, you know, he's taken a club out of a non-league and into League Two. So
a lot of talk about this being some sort of fairy tale. Alan Alger on Twitter said basically that papers will be getting the Forest Green fairy tale stories ready, but nearly £10 million losses this season and £200,000 spent on agents this season alone. So there's certainly some interesting financial situations going on there, and we'll see what's going on.
It reminds me a bit of the Crawley, what happened with Crawley about 10 years ago, and also what happened with Fleetwood where, you know, it's these clubs who the size of the clubs are small, but the amount of money you need to make them rich is, you know, people can afford to do that. So as they are now, then they're probably quite a big fish still in League Two due to the funding and the money they can put behind it, despite the relative smallness of them.
They've certainly got quality. Liam Noble's been a big player for them this season, always been hugely talented, with also huge question marks over his temperament, but seems to have curbed it, given a lot of responsibility at Forest Green, and no doubt he'll be really looking to prove himself at EFL level, so we look forward to seeing that. And we move on to the Championship, George. Fulham 1, Reading 1. I was at the game yesterday at Craven Cottage, and it was, well, it was very, very tense. It was cagey. It was tedious at times. Reading specifically with some pretty obvious time-wasting tactics that resulted in me seeing something I'd never seen before. John Swift, who had a very difficult game and actually did not live up to expectation, through my eyes anyway. John Swift being booked after about 35 minutes while taking a corner for time wasting. It was absolutely ridiculous. The referee had had a word with McShane minutes before that, the Reading captain, and basically warned him. Al Habsi was taking 45 seconds to take each goal kick, and you know, 10 to 15 with a goal kick out of his hands as well. And it was getting a bit silly. But after that, obviously, they had to be a little bit more careful, and the game really exploded into life in the second half. I think the first half was quiet and cagey, and it was down to Reading. We've spoken at length about Reading this season, about whether or not they deserve to be third, and none of that obviously matters at this stage. One thing I will say that was abundantly clear seeing them in the flesh is how absurdly well coached and well drilled they are. Yapstam, as much as I've ever seen a team before, has such a strict game plan, such strict instructions, and the players, certainly in the first half, were following them, and it was working for what they had to do. Specifically Williams and Evans in the midfield, shackling Johansson and Kearney, just following them around it, and you know, Fulham were at their most dangerous when those two were putting the strings, and what they did essentially was to cut off the supply there, and I was really impressed. And they weren't, it wasn't a sort of Mourinho in a big game sort of defensive
type of, that's the go-to now.
Yeah, no, I think it is. You know, they weren't chucking men forwards, that's for sure. But Kermagan and Graben played up front. They were occupying Fulham's back two all game. They were trying to get it up to them, playing fairly direct when they won the ball. And, you know, it wasn't like they will be very, very happy, of course, to have gone away with a draw. But, you know, as I said, it wasn't the most defensive performance in the world. And I was pretty impressed with them. Of course, the mischance from Aluko early on showed what Fulham can do even against a team that well-drilled, and a chance that he would have been disappointed to miss. But then, obviously, in the second half, Reading taking the lead through Jordan Obita. And I think, George, that is kind of part of what we've spoken about all season, isn't it?
I think it was their only shot on target all game. I think they had three shots, and that was their one shot on target, taken from a wide area, low percentage of chance of scoring, and they've scored. So it's the same old story, and you know, they're running their luck by doing it, but if they keep putting the chances away, they do fashion, even if there aren't very many, then they're going to be okay.
Yeah, there was a lot of anger directed towards Stuart Atwell, the referee, from Fulham fans, not least in the build-up to that goal. There was a real sort of coming together of about four bodies in the centre of the park, and Danny Williams, well, from my eyes, basically did that thing where he fell on the ball and sort of moved to pick it up, almost, to put his hand on it. Referee didn't give him a free kick, but also didn't give a free kick against him for handball. And there was McShane to sort of stride forward with the ball, having picked up the pieces and set up Obita. But, you know, playoff football is so exciting, and that was a great sort of example of exactly how tense it can be and exactly how amazing it can be as well. As you say, one shot on target, one goal, incredible limbs in the away end. You know, it was amazing to see, and Fulham did hit back. You know, the things that we've championed all season, one touch passing, clever movement and good execution going forward, they were showing bits of that, but not enough to score up to the point where they did. But it was a wonderful exchange down the left from Malone and Cabano and Kearney. And then George, Ali Alhabsi, you mentioned him in the preview podcast, a guy that can perform the sublime and the ridiculous. I'm not going to go as far as to say ridiculous, but a low cross that he pushed out centrally onto the head of Tom Kearney. Not ideal, I think it's fair to say.
No, it wasn't really. He's, as we said before, he's had a decent enough season at times, but you know, in playoff matches, as we're going to discuss in League Two, mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty important that your keeper gets in front of shots and keeps them out rather than spilling them or letting them through, and perhaps he didn't do that.
Red card for Paul McShane with about 15 minutes to go.
Correct decision.
Yes, the correct decision. I think there was a suggestion from royally tinted glasses Reading fans that he might have been sort of slightly off balance due to a Fulham player pulling him back. I think even so, the connection of studs on knee only results to one thing. It was interesting, in the game during the season played at Craven Cottage, Reading went 2-0 down and then lost a man, proceeded to concede three goals as Fulham were rampant. It felt like that could happen again, and yet I think Fulham seemed a little tired to my eyes. Certainly Kearney and Johansson, who are the creators. It's on them to link everything together, and I think they were so tired, having spent all game basically trying to dart away from their markers, that they couldn't quite make anything happen. A lot of play was going through Fredericks down the right, who had one good sort of cross-come shot, but generally, I was disappointed with his decision-making and with his delivery. And so we move to Tuesday, George, where Reading, they've got to feel good about themselves.
Well, they'll certainly feel better now, but unsurprisingly, I think for you, I still think Fulham will progress. And I think that Reading will have to. I mean, it's one thing stopping Fulham from playing, but they're going to have to do something themselves in order to get through. I think Fulham will be too strong for them.
It's certainly, just to strip it down to its most basic, having watched that game, it seems really unlikely that over the course of 90 minutes or 120 minutes between those two teams, that there's a scenario where Reading will score more goals.
Exactly.
And so, you know, barring penalties, that will be an issue. But that remains to be seen. And as we know, and as we saw when Reading took the lead, anything can happen in the playoffs. The other game ended in a draw as well, George. Huddersfield 0, Sheffield Wednesday 0. There's not a huge amount really to touch on here, but a lot of talk in the build-up about Huddersfield's poor form, the way that they were sort of coping heading into the playoffs, and some question marks over that. But looking at their performance today, there can be no question that they are sort of worried or overmatched.
I think that's right. They'll be disappointed not to get the result, but any concerns that they were undercooked or basically they weren't the strongest team that should be in this stage of the competition is now out the window. Mm. They can go to Hillsborough with every confidence that they can certainly beat Sheffield Wednesday, and Sheffield Wednesday shouldn't really hold anything, you know, too fearful for them. So whilst they'll be disappointed not to get the win at home, they're very much kind of tie open there in my view.
So poor on the ball today, Sheffield Wednesday, and I saw a lot of the fans on Twitter really, really grateful to have left there, you know, with the scores level in the tie. Incredibly impressive performance, it should be said, by their defence, and especially the centre-backs Lees and Leuvens. But on the ball, considering the quality that we always talk about with Sheffield Wednesday, they really did underwhelm. There was very little created at all, actually. And on the flip side, Huddersfield had a lot of the ball, seemed a lot more comfortable and seemed to create more with it. But generally, clear-cut chances were few and far between in this game. And it's yet another example of a second leg that's going to be absolutely, you know, on a knife edge.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You know, when it is like that, I think one of the reasons why people have been tipping Sheffield Wednesday is when it is like that, you know, the big players, the more experienced players, do we still expect them perhaps to really come to the fore?
You'd say so. You'd think that they probably have, they're better equipped in terms of experience in order to do it. But at the same time, they haven't really turned up there. We've already seen this season that they did turn it on with 6 or 7 games left to go, and they needed to make sure they got in the playoffs. They've got that character. But you know, as we said, the form book before this game looked like it was Sheffield Wednesday who were the team in form, and now you've got to question that. So as you say, tie open.
It'd be very interesting to see how the game pans out, because when Sheffield Wednesday have so little of the ball, I mean, they're really, the supply is completely cut off. Forestieri was there to sort of link the midfield and the attack, but really was starved of any decent ball, and when he was fairly quickly shut down. And you know, they chucked on Rhodes and Winnell, and we said in our previews how amazing that they have these players that they can come and bring on to win them the game off the bench. But it didn't change anything. No. They're, these are number nines. They're not able to do much when the play is so far away from them. So if Huddersfield can dominate possession again, then you know, it's going to take a lot for Sheffield Wednesday, a lot of improvement anyway, for them to turn that around. In League Two, George, we were treated to some serious ties tonight. Starting at Blackpool, where Blackpool beat Luton 3-2. In Cullen, George, did we have the performance of the evening?
Undoubtedly. The hat-trick hero and the second goal was an absolute stunner. Ball kind of breaks to him about 25. I think he actually won the initial kind of knockdown as well. And then ball breaks about 25 yards out and he bends it top right. And it's against his old club as well. Player who had a good time at Luton always impressed me when he was there, and I was surprised when he did go, and especially to Blackpool, who at the time were fighting for their lives in League One. No muted celebrations there as well. He was he was fairly happy. I don't really know what to make of these of the tie necessarily. I think that it's a huge result for Blackpool, and again we can say that it's on a knife edge, but both teams can probably be fairly confident they're in with a big chance going to the second leg.
I think that's right. Luton will be really disappointed to have lost that game, and yet also encouraged, and probably feel that in front of the Kenilworth Road crowd that they will certainly have enough to win the game. Now, whether they win by one or two goals is going to decide how the game is decided overall. But certainly just another example of two good sides playing well when it mattered. Luton feeling a little hard done by some fairly questionable refereeing over the course of the 90 minutes. It is unfortunate, but that has been a theme of the weekend, really, and it is very sad to see. What else is notable? The fact that there's a Potts and a Vassell playing for both teams. And Potts and Vassell were Luton's two goal scorers as well. Isaac Vassell at Luton. Just a really interesting story, having been picked up from Truro City. He'd been sort of left on the scrap heap after leaving Plymouth, and he looks like a player very, very comfortable at League Two level. And, as we've said before, Hilton's always going to be there or thereabouts. Marriott looked dangerous at times, and Vassell's there as well. So there's definitely match winners for Luton. For Blackpool, I got the feeling that they were sort of riding their luck at times, really, as you say, with Cullen's brilliant strike for the second goal, with a defensive error helping them out in the first goal, and then with a penalty, of course, after just mindless defending from Luton at set pieces. It was always coming that the referee was going to give a pen, and he did. But Blackpool have the edge. Shout out to 1,648 Luton fans who made the trip to Blackpool. They made up an attendance of 3,882, and it was very noticeable on the television that Bloomfield Road was mostly empty. And I think it's worth, applauding, really, the Blackpool fans, because as we've seen this season with the Checkatrade Trophy and with other difficult owners, it is difficult to consistently protest and to stay away when your team have a chance to play in an exciting match. And it goes against a lot of, the fact that we all love football and we want to watch our team. But for them to continue to protest against what they feel are owners damaging the club, I think you've got to respect that to an extent. So fair play to them. George, up in Carlisle, where how many Exeter fans? About 570 Exeter fans made the trip from Devon up north on a Sunday evening for a 6:30 kickoff. They were treated to another incredible game.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah, 3-3 draw Again, goalkeeping displays under the spotlight. Gillespie for Carlisle, certainly at fault for at least two of Exeter's goals. But it was a great spectacle. And again, Carlisle, you know, there were concerns about their form going into the game. And it was a kind of a late flurry that got them into the playoffs. But, you know, they've now shown that they're on merit and they're in the tie. As you say, amazing effort from the fans to go up there on a Sunday. But yeah, as you mentioned, these games between these two sides normally bring goals. So hopefully we will be treated to another feast of them midweek next week.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see how there won't be goals. These two teams are in terms of their attacking prowess versus the other team's defensive structure. They're just, it's like a hot knife through butter. It could have been about 6-4. Again, some refereeing decisions, mostly going against Exeter, it has to be said, made them feel pretty bitter. But it's just been a fascinating tie all round. I mean, Paul Tisdale, after the final game of the season in which Carlisle beat Exeter 3-2 to get into the playoffs and to set this up, he refused to talk to the media. He told his players to do the same. He's a real sort of he's an interesting manager the way that he operates. And that was in full force again today. You know, they played their game and they found themselves 3-1 up. And Ollie Watkins had a goal disallowed to make it 4-1, wrongly disallowed, it turns out. A few minutes later, Tisdale brought on Reuben Reid for Woodman, a striker for a defender, and went 3-4-3. And within 5 minutes, Carlisle had scored two to come back to 3-3. And one of them, a complete fluke goal from a cross, it should be pointed out. But, you know, it's those sort of decisions that can really make or break you and can make you look pretty silly.
Oh, and obviously on paper it doesn't look good at all. But I do think that Reid played actually very well when he came on for Exeter and he looked very dangerous. So, you know, it's easy to look at someone making a tactical change like that at a certain scoreline and it going wrong. But I don't know if you can necessarily blame Tisdale for it. But having said that, yeah, it doesn't look great.
Not at all. Well, I mean, as well as that disallowed goal, there was another disallowed goal, a brilliant finish from Reid that looked borderline, maybe onside, maybe offside, pretty hard to tell. An amazing save from Gillespie at the end, making up for an earlier error, and then hitting the post as well, right at the end next to it. So they were just flooding back and forth. It was an unbelievably entertaining game, and I think we would certainly, we'd certainly suggest that everyone clears their Thursday night schedule to watch that second leg. I mean, try and get both games up if you can. It's a real shame that we can't watch both at the same time. You know, we've got some real reservations about that, put it that way. But these are two flawed teams making an incredible playoff semi-final, and we enjoyed absolutely every minute of it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's spot on. And yeah, it's just the best advert for the EFL, goalkeeping errors aside.
And refereeing.
And refereeing, but the goals are good. And I think we're going to be in for some more treats in the coming weeks.
Thank you very much for listening, guys. I hope this was a nice sort of Sunday evening, Monday morning bonus podcast. We've got a busy week ahead, so we thought we'd get it out early and reflect on what's been a very interesting weekend in the Championship and League Two playoffs. We've obviously got the second legs of both divisions this weekend. This week, and then the League One playoff final this weekend. So back next week after that League One playoff final to review all of that. Please continue to join us, to share us. We were really humbled by the reaction to the playoff preview podcast, and it makes a huge difference for us. We work really hard to try and bring a good product to you, and so if you do enjoy what we do, then again, if you could give us a rating on iTunes, leave us a review, keep sharing, keep posting, we are very, very grateful.